I would like to remind you that Ruth Rooks, who has done the organizing for this get together and is in the back, Ruth. Names and addresses of those who are registered, and the list is back here in the corner, and so please pick one up before you go.
Very much so.
It's my pleasure to introduce to you Bob Howard from the, not Bob Wiss.
No, not Bob Wiss this time.
I see some people here from the Legend of Daniel Boone and Lincoln at Harrisburg, Kentucky, who will conduct the session for the rest of the afternoon.
Thank you, Clint. Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I did want to question Mark on the hour he picked, because Alabama is going to tee up in about half an hour, and I thought about introducing these fellows and then leaving, but I've got a building to build myself, so I'm very interested in what they have to say. Also, I really appreciate him putting me on the panel, because I can take this little pamphlet back to my board of directors, and they always question whether I know anything or not, and I can say I was on the panel that discussed the amphitheater construction, so it makes me look good anyway. But actually, I'm here to learn as much as all of you, because I have a building to build, and one of the first things I learned was that I don't know enough. I know I can describe needs, I can describe things at the theater itself, what I'd like to have, and all of these things, but when it gets down to choice of construction materials and running of electrical lines and where's the sewer lines in the old theater, which doesn't have any construction plots to begin with, there's an awful lot out there that you can't be an expert on, and you need someone who's an expert in the area to talk to. And that's, we're very fortunate here today to have two gentlemen here very experienced in outdoor drama construction. I'd like to start today with Barry Moore, with Barry Moore Architects Incorporated from Houston, Texas. He's a fellow of the AIA. He's been with theater design and historic preservation. He's actually following his father's footsteps in the theater consultant business. And he's recently consulted with the Institute of Outdoor Drama in many projects, but recently in Pueblo, Colorado on a project out there. So very interested to hear what Barry has to say.
Thank you very much. I'm going to subject you to the kind of subliminal training that everybody in architecture school has. Architects are unable to speak unless the lights go out and the slides go on. So I'm going to risk losing some of you into the afternoon nap by turning on the slides, and I'd like to talk from pictures. The first slide we have is, I got the clicker.
You know, what I don't have is any powers.
Okay.
Let's see what we got.
How's that?
There we go.
There you are.
Thank you.
The first slide. This is a new outdoor theater that is not yet under construction in Lafayette, Indiana. The Battle of Tippecanoe is the play written for this theater. The anticipated opening date of this facility is in June of 1988. It should have been June of 1985, but there's been an awful lot of things, such as a governor from another part of the state, and the change of command within the arts organization itself. I consulted with an architectural engineering firm in Indianapolis, which did the design work. This is budgeted at between $2.8 and $3.2 million. Which from my experience and point of view is a whole lot of money and a little too much just for this, but it also includes a whole lot of parking, a whole lot of demonstration, historic gardens back there, a great big conference picnic facility, and a whole lot of other stuff, and what is otherwise just a piece of ground that goes by the name of a county park. So a lot more is going into that than just the theater itself. That aside, I'd like to now go into a kind of a case study of three theater projects that I've been involved with. And I'm doing something that I would be probably reluctant to do if I were a little closer to home. I want to critique my own work and kind of confess, if I may, what I think could have been done better or could have been done differently. I think the problem, the number one problem that faces theaters now, in my experience, is how to stay in business for the long haul. If you've got problems, you surely should not have to deal with a problem from the design and architecture of a building. I like to look at the theaters that way to see how, if there's anything that architecture can do to improve the working conditions, improve the cost, operating cost, maintenance cost, and so forth. That's a slow actor. This is a project I worked on 10 or 11 years ago in Livingston, Texas, for the Alabama Coushatta Indian Reservation, with a great deal of help from Raymond Raylard and Mark Sumner to get the project started. We had to come in and sort of create a whole new graphic design vocabulary, because these Indians had voluntarily immigrated to Texas between 1790 and 1810, and thereby effectively cutting themselves off from all of their cultural roots. Through a lot of research and ethnographic references and so forth, we were able to come up with some images that would contribute very closely and track carefully with the historic material to be depicted in Kermit Hunter's play and in Frank Lloyd's music. This is the same entranceway at night. Those are two-dimensional graphic designs taken from carved Alabama amulets from the Tom Bigby region of Alabama, where these people came from originally. Inside, we were able to introduce some things that added to the comfort of the audience and happiness of the ticket buyers, such as a rain shelter that had a whole lot of natural ventilation, because there's nothing up there but open air, and there was always a draft on the hottest day. The house itself was raked a little bit higher than it needed to be. 1,600 seats put fairly close together, pretty high lighting positions, so that we could expect fairly good technical conditions from the technical people involved. Now, what we also did from the beginning was to work real closely with the script of the play Beyond the Sundown, or I should say at this stage we worked closely with the outline of the script of the play of Kermit Hunter's, so that we could design the stage, design the set, and do as much architecture as we could to specifically fit the script that the Alabama Coushatta Reservation was going to use. And that included burying our crossovers, making tunnels in the back so that actors could get from one side of the stage to the other and really go under the hill and not be seen without having a conventional crossover of any kind. Just to prove the point, these are a couple of reprobates working on the project. Neither one of these people have as much hair now as they did at that time, but this is a hill, a temple hill that was built at stage right and carefully kind of placed and worked out and tied into the action of the play and was built by the general contractor. And the end result was a permanent set over here, a kind of a hilltop here over which people and Indians could come, and then on the other side the temple mound was over there, and the high chief priest could come out and do pronouncements and so forth. The play, at night the sun goes down, magic comes up, and people felt pretty much like they were in on the same site, but in the old days, at the time, the beginning of the Texas Revolution against Mexico. I think, however, now, I would have to say that we probably went a little too far in designing the theater and the stage to specifically fit the script of a play. This play is closed, been closed for several years now. I'm not going to take credit for it. It so happens that there was a change of administration at the reservation, and the new people in command, the Tories or Whigs, I don't know which one it was, decided they really didn't want to be in the tourist business after all. They really didn't like tourists coming on the reservation. So the theater's closed, and they're out of business. But at any rate, if it were still open, they would have a hard time adapting this to anything else. This is another outdoor theater that very few people have seen because it was only open for 60 days, I think. Unfortunately, Peachtree City. This is in Peachtree City. This was opened a year after the Sundown Theater at Livingston, Texas. And we were able to capitalize on some things that we learned on the previous project. This whole theater was built much more cheaply. It was about the same size in terms of number of seats. The local organization was using a lot of seated volunteers. They had a lot of donated materials. The rain shelter came in and performed the same sort of function, that we could build it a whole lot more cheaply and more simply. Go through these a little bit quicker. The seats were adapted fairly uncomfortably, but at least they had a backrest and you could rent a cushion and you could make it through the play fairly comfortably. The lighting towers were incorporated into the rain shelter, which was a whole lot simpler. And these treated poles here, which held the lighting rack up above, also were part of the integral structure of the rain shelter itself. Now, next slide. When you get into the When we got to the stage, it was everybody's wish and idea at this time to not get too terribly specific with what we built on the stage, so that this could be more adaptable to other kinds of things. Because the people in Peachtree City that built the theater were interested in trying to find other uses for this during the off season, such as concerts or commencements or baccalaureates or whatever, weddings, anything you can think of. So all of this was bare in the daytime, a very pretty park, which was intended to be sort of a tourist attraction in its own right. But then at night, everything comes on that needs to come on, including set pieces and color, and the lighting itself picks up most of the mood of the theater. This project closed and I think did not open the following year. It was only on for one season. Some very uncharitable critics suggested it was on the wrong side of Atlanta. However, I think the facts of the matter were the bicentennial celebration was a great disappointment all the way around, and the attendance figures were way, way below what they should have been. The last project that I've got slides of today is, in many, many respects, to me, a much more interesting and challenging kind of project. These people, this is the Point Theater of the Hill Country Arts Foundation near Kerrville, Texas. This is about 60 miles northwest of San Antonio in the Texas Hill Country, which has been a resort area popular with Dallas and Houston people for 60 or 70 years. The Point Theater was started in 1952 as a community theater to do outdoor musicals in the summer. Most of the people involved in this organization, I'm sorry to say, have never heard of the Institute of Outdoor Drama and have a very slight appreciation of historic outdoor drama. However, the more we got into it, the more we realized that this is an ideal setting for an outdoor drama. And this theater has the ability to adapt itself without compromising any of its good features to house an outdoor drama if financially or aesthetically or politically or for whatever reason they decide they may like to go in that direction. This is a bunch of before pictures. This was a little wooden shed that's the stage house. There were 350 seats on concrete. This is the Guadalupe River that goes behind, a real pretty scenic river that's very popular for fishing and swimming. And next slide, Mark. This is the opening scene from Finian's Rainbow. Real popular in the summertime. Thursday, Fridays, and Saturday nights. Maybe 3 weekends in a row, and then they'll strike it and do another show. 3 to 4 productions every summer. The sight lines, as you can see, are not real good. You have to kind of wiggle around to see around people in front of you, but the setting is really great. Here's the river. Here's a couple of really big trees. The climate is nice because it's dry enough to cool off, and a lot of wind comes up in the light wind comes up in the evening from the river. But also another big problem is this is only 10 feet or 11 feet above the floor of the stage is the structure here. It's a handmade deal. Over the years, people donated materials. They threw the theater together. Probably a lot of you have had to work with a situation like that. That's the lighting. Actually, that's only half the lighting. We had another call on the other side. And that's the trash right there. So, that's what we started with. These people had been successful enough to raise about $400,000. They were sick and tired of working in that facility, which was also beginning to show problems from flooding. This whole site is in the floodplain of the river. And so we were hired and asked to tear down the auditorium part of the outdoor theater, build a new stage and a new stage house to accommodate all the wishes of the committee. Well, what we ended up doing was building a new stage house down here that would serve for a combination of clone scenery upstage and wagon scenery downstage. And it took, this was not intentional in the beginning, but it took the shape of a traditional early barn, which we thought was a happy coincidence. And then once we noticed that, began to pick up on that. The slope for the audience was doubled. The percent of slope was doubled. We were not quite convinced yet that it was going to be just right for sound. Nobody could hear in the old theater, as small as it was, just because it had nothing there to reinforce the sound of the actors in the show. So with the help of an acoustical consultant, this sloping panel here was introduced here to help the sound project out. And this panel here at the back of the house was so angled to catch most of the sound coming from the stage here and to reinforce this back part of the stage. And on top of that, we could get a lighting deck. And this is an existing pavilion that I showed in the first slide, which used to be a roller rink in 1946. And it's now the lobby, it's now the rehearsal room, and it's now where they do small plays in the wintertime. This is a plan view. Existing building is here. The new house is here, and the new stage is right there. We still had to deal with the problems of the flooding, and I'll get to that later on the slide. There was no way to relocate anything. Nobody could do that. So we entered a clause in our contract that would indemnify us for any damage to the building because it was in the floodplain. They signed that, and then we proceeded accordingly. See what we could do. This is the view of the new facility from the river. I actually had an architect in my office get out in a rowboat to take the picture, and I wouldn't go, but he didn't have a choice and went out and took it in the early morning. This is the new rise of the house, the sound reflector panel, the lighting deck here, and the theater is there. And from the side, there's a large stage loading door here on this side. This gravel road ties back into the old building where the scene shop is located. This is an existing tree we saw before. Another tree there. We only had to remove one elm tree to build the view. Good. From the roof, you can begin to see some of the adaptability of the stage. This is all dents up in there, so that from the standpoint of working on the stage, it too has a natural venturi action. There's a lot of air circulation for the comfort of the cast and crew. The stage could also, it also has a pit here, and the stage is trapped as well. For this production, the runway was put out in front to further throw the actors out into the front of the audience. These are the old chairs from the old theater because we didn't have enough money to put new chairs in. The second season, however, they raised enough money to put in comfortable aluminum stadium seats. Okay. Different show, different time of day, same theater. Okay. The next series of slides are before and after pictures to show what had happened. Here's the river right here. The year before we were hired to come in and work on this, there was 7 feet of water in this theater barn that came up to there. And our new stage floor, next picture, I'm higher up the hill, but the new stage floor was about 5 feet above where the earlier stage floor had been. We also took care to not have any electrical outlets any closer than 5 feet to the floor of the stage so that when high water did come up here, we would minimize our electrical problem. Also, anything fragile could be flown up out of the way and not expected to get wet. We did a lot of earthwork over here also to take the fast-moving water and throw it back out into the river to protect this corner back here. This is the old theater looking back toward the house. This is the existing building that we kept. This is the scene shop over there with the higher roof and the existing chairs. And that's the new theater. I think you can get a sense of that higher sweep on the stairs that goes back up to there and the new deck in the back. Okay. That's the tech booth up there. That's the old tech booth at about this level here, and the lighting positions are here and there. And mostly floodlights, go ahead. And then the new lighting position is up here with a few positions there, but there's a lot of front of house lighting on the large acoustical projection over the front of the stage. Most of the lighting is done from the stage building itself and very little from the top deck in the back. This is before. We're standing at the old pavilion looking down toward the river toward the theater. And go ahead. And then this is the old building, which is someday will be replaced with a new lobby and a new rehearsal building and shop building there. And then this is our new work from here over. Actually from here over. This is the bottom of the sound reflector panel, and then the lighting deck is up on the tech deck is up on top of that. All right. This is pure engineering. This is the view from the top lighting bridge. It's a terrific place to watch the show, especially if it's not a real good show. It's a really nice place to be. Inside the dressing rooms, these are upstairs on stage right and stage left. We didn't spend any money we didn't have to spend. And everybody liked the way it looked like a CCC summer camp, so that was fun. I'm fond of this slide because this is looking up into the stage loft. This is a flying scrim right here, and these are fusers and tormentors and drapery fabric. These are the line sets down here on the floor of the stage way down there. What I like about it is the whole thing is built out of wood. And it's probably the only time in my life I can ever expect to build a stage house out of wood. But it was permissible to do so. This is not in any kind of an incorporated area. And there are enough ways for everybody to get safely out of the building in case of fire. So it's a true wooden barn that works as a stage. Now, we still have the flooding problem to deal with. And this is from the orchestra pit, which was designed to house about 24 musicians. And underneath the stage, we put in a 7-foot diameter culvert that went straight back to the river underneath the stage. That was also the tunnel into which we trapped from the stage. Now, when the high water comes up, the theater is not working and in use when high water comes up. That's the number one assumption. Which is usually it's overnight or the next morning or something like that. It's a lot of rainy weather, the theater is rained out anyway, no one's there. So last spring, I read in my Houston paper that there were some real serious rains in the hill country, and I called up the man that had been chairman of the building committee when I built the theater. He's a banker in Kerrville. And I asked what had happened. He said, "Well, we were really pleased." He said, "We had 3 feet of water on the stage, which came up to there. This was a 50-year flood. The water came up to 3 feet on the stage, and that's only for just 30 minutes, you know. It goes back down, but it can still ruin everything. The water came into the pit, ran through the culvert, back down to the river. The important thing was we weren't holding the water anywhere. The next day they came out with hoses and brooms, cleaned out the pit, and that was the end of it. No problem. Nothing much happened. So I was pleased that it passed its first flood test. Now, as far as adaptability is concerned, one thing that I wanted to do when we first built the theater was to have large barn doors, rolling barn doors, upstage, so that possibly they could open it up at the beginning of a show, slowly close them as it gets dark, and start the show, because I thought looking out into the river would be a great advantage to the audience. But they elected not to, because just back of the stage wall is a deck back here which we use as the green room. And there are a lot of shows where they've got 30 or 40 people in the chorus, and you've got to put those people someplace so that they don't, as you know, don't disturb the action going on. But what we put in inside this wall was the appropriate steel framing, so that in the future, if they want to do it, they can knock out the wood panels, put in their rolling doors, and open it up to the outside. This is, I think, one of the most appropriate features for the theater, because if they ever want to go into historic drama of any kind, that will further create a relationship between the audience and the site, the historic site in front of them, looking through the theater to the water. And the water itself can be used as a dramatic entrance to further the action of the play. This is the shoulder of earth that we moved over here to divert the force of the water. That worked too. All that came into the theater was very slow rising water, no horizontal force. Next slide. And this is a view from the green room deck, looking out to the river in the back. This past August, they finished their season with a musical of The Wizard of Oz, the Hollywood version, and it was a wonderful production, and for the first time I saw the theater used, pulling out all the whistles, bells, and stops. Glinda the Witch flew in and out, probably a little too much, probably about 8 times she flew in and out this way. And the Wicked Witch was melted with a bucket of water, and she disappeared into a trap and a cloud of steam and black wet cloth and so forth. And they obviously needed 30 midgets for the Munchkins. They don't have that many midgets in West Texas, and so they built a lot of little pallets with casters on them and made long overcoats, and had the chorus sitting on the pallets wearing tennis shoes, scooting themselves around on the pallets. So it was a lot of fun, and I took my camera to update my slides, and in the opposite fashion of the proverbial gun, the camera wasn't loaded. Sorry to say. And then the last slide from the road, this looks the same as it always did. We added some banners out here, and then that's the reflecting at the top of the lighting deck out in front. But so far, that's my most adaptable outdoor theater, and I just don't want to be part of the problem. Thank you.
Do you still have some other slides of the others you didn't bring with you?
No, that's all I have.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to critique you.
Oh. In talking to Barry to begin with, I had misunderstood. I thought he had slides of some of our other shows that he could have pointed out a few of the blunders that were made over the years. I know he would have picked on me quite a bit, because our theater does have quite a few blunders built into it. Mark tells the great story that originally when our theater built, we've got a very, very gentle rake to the theater, and we're on a state park. And of course, in the wisdom of the state park people, they didn't assume that an outdoor drama would succeed, and of course, next year will be our 25th season. He tells me that the engineer or architect afterward fellow who was building it said, well, we put it in there so we could put a line of bulldozers up on the hillside with some dirt and just cover it right back up and have a hillside again at the end of the season. So we have some problems that are built into it, inherent. We have a very slow, very gentle rake, have very poor sight lines. It also doesn't help our sound at all, because all the sound, if I stand in the back of the theater, sounds wonderful. In the middle of the house, it sounds terrible. So we've had to try to overcome all of these problems, and it costs you a lot of extra money. And it's money that hopefully, if you spend it in the beginning, especially for your new folks, you'll save it over the years. Our next speaker will be Dr. David Weiss, who I have been consulting with all day here. And so I can vouch for his skills here, but he also is a veteran of outdoor drama, and most recently has worked and designed with Viking. So, Dr. Weiss.
Behind you. Do this blocking without Barry's slide of, or slides of, the Peachtree City project, of course, provided Frank Lewin and me with a bit of negative deja vu. I did the scenery and lights for that production, and Frank did the music. And it was a lovely theater. I think it was a very successful project. But on opening night, the management came to each of us in